Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Started to believe I'd never find anyone. Doubt tried to convince me to give in. Said you can't win. But one day the sun came shining through. The rain had stopped. And the skies were blue. And oh, what a revelation to see. Someone was saying, I love you to me. Oh, compassion and send to me a stroke of love called you. A one in a million you. I was a lonely man with empty arms to fill. Then I found a piece of happiness to call my own. And life is worth living again. For to love you to me is to live. Oh, one in a million chance. Life, show compassion and send to me a stroke of love called you. A one in a million you. A
Report. As always, we open up in the name of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, who is none other than Master Farad Muhammad, the Almighty, All-Wise, True and Living God, Allah, who has come to us this day and granted us a divine mercy and reminder in the person of the last and most surely the greatest of the apostles, prophets, and messengers of God to ever live. We speak about none other than our leader, teacher, and guide for these final days of judgment, the most holy and humble, Elijah Muhammad, and we greet all of our listening and viewing audiences with the greetings of peace, love, and paradise in the original language of Arabic, which means peace be unto you. We say to you all in both their names with love, I Assalamu alaikum. For those of you who may wish to participate in our discussion today, you're welcome to call in at 347-989-0855. That's 347-989-0855. Or you can hit us up with a message at Hiram1555@yahoo.com. That's Hiram1555@yahoo.com. As always, we'd like to thank you for giving us another hour of your day and another day of your time. We'd like to thank the thousands of you who listen live from around the globe and the thousands of you who will download us later from all of our affiliate sites, be it Hiram1555.tumblr.com. Twitter.com/Hiram1555, Facebook.com/Hiram1555, BlogTalkRadio.com/Hiram1555, and our main news blog, which is formerly TrumpetOfTruth.wordpress.com, and also formerly SalamJournal.com and SalamJournal.org, which is now the Hiram1555 blog at Hiram1555.com. Come again, my beloved family. Let me say unto you all, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to another edition of the most powerful platform for truth anywhere, bar none, on the face of God's green earth. This is your platform for black education, black enlightenment, and black edification. This is the Star and Crescent Report, and our show today is titled The Economic Collapse and the Loss of Dollar Hegemony. Now, as we address the title itself, The Economic Collapse and the Loss of Dollar Hegemony, that in itself says a lot when we look at the landscape globally, when we look at the landscape back here domestically within America itself. Anyone with common sense will tell you that something's not right with the economy. When you have to work more jobs, more hours to equal one job, or you see all of these places closing down. You see, you hear all the news of everything is closing down. You see, and what they do with a lot of things, let me tell you, because I'm going to be touching on different things, right, because I need to connect a few things. But you'll see them trying to minimize the effect of inflation as all your bills soar, more taxes soar on the poor people now. Remember Mike Bloomberg, the one who is criticizing Donald Trump? He said poor people, black people, should be taxed more because they don't know what to do with the little money that they have. And if they are taxed more, they can contribute more to the society. This is what Bloomberg was saying, right? And won't have money to blow on fancy cars and all these expensive clothes. This is what Bloomberg was saying, the Democratic candidate for president. So these are things we have to look out for. But anyway, as I said, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. They are masking inflation. Do you notice that I'll go in the store. Sometimes I'll just look at things, and I'll take pictures, and I'll wait, and I'll come back a week or a month or so, or maybe a month and a half, and I'll go back and I'll take pictures, even if things that I don't even eat or things that I don't even buy. And then I'll look at packaging. Because the packaging continues to shrink, and they try to make you believe that less is more, and you're paying $5, $10 for something at one time when you got three times as much and you paid $1 or $2 for. This is masking inflation, right? Why would you mask inflation? What is one of the main symptoms of inflation? It is a currency collapse or currency volatility, right? Well, what leads to currency collapse, currency volatility, instability, and inflation? It is the money printing that goes out of control. It is exorbitant debt and borrowing that works in your life, right? Your money becomes unstable even if you're making $100,000. If you got a loan at this bank for $50, if you have a loan at that bank for $50, if you owe this person $10, if you owe that person $20,000, all of that leads to fiscal volatility, right? The same thing applies on the government books and off the government books, right? This leads to an increase of people shying away from purchasing the things which funds the federal government's budgets. I want you to listen to me good. This has everything to do with the collapse of the dollar, the loss of dollar hegemony. the economic collapse of America and the white or the Western world. This has everything to do with it. Because you continue to hear about bailouts and bail-ins. You continue to hear about negative interest rates and junk bonds and derivatives. All of these things are symptoms of a deeper ailment of fiscal insolvency, of inept leadership, of greed and corruption. This stuff does not just start at the Fed. This goes to the very core of American and Western civilization and economic prudence. You understand me? Matter of fact, the dictionary. Let's go to the dictionary, okay? Because we need understanding. And sometimes when we look at things, we really don't get an understanding. See, white people, and I notice this a lot, and brothers and sisters, for those of you who are just tuning in and you hear me like stuttering just a tad bit, or you hear my speech a little bit slurred, bear with me. I was practicing a little jujitsu and a little kung fu with my son, and he, as we were doing a move, he was not still, and he shot up with his head to the bottom of my chin and neck, and I bit my tongue, so it's kind of swollen, okay? So you have to deal with that. But at least I'm on my post. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. All right? But let's go to something. Definition. Now, qualitative easing, they try to put a beautiful spin on it, but it is what it is. But this is the definition of this. Qualitative easing is an unconventional monetary policy in which a central bank purchases government securities or other securities from the market in order to increase the money supply and encourage lending and investment. Why? Why is that used in specifically in the Western monetary system? Why? Because the monetary system is based off credit, right? And so there must be lending in order, there must be an expansion of money printing and an expansion of lending in order for the economies to continue to appear as if they're growing, right? Now, that's what quantitative easing is. It is in saturating the markets with money. Listen, if you have money and you continue to print up money, that in itself tells you that that causes a decrease in value of the money that you have. So what banks are doing, they're taxing you on the backside. You understand what I'm saying? So if you had $100 in the bank and they enter this thing of monetary quantitative easing or monetary expansion, they are diluting the purchasing power of your currency. Is this something? So they're taxing you on the back end to help out their brothers and their sisters who have been corrupt and lax in monetary policy so that they don't go bankrupt. So they're issuing a non-spoken-of tax, okay, against you. I want you to understand what is going on. See, brothers and sisters, for those of you who are new to the show, some of you don't understand, but please bear with me. I have to lay these things out so that you can understand, because a lot of times these people talk right over your head, and you'll smile, Have you ever been in a conversation where a person is talking to you and you just smiling and shaking your head and they say, you know what I'm saying? And they're talking about something and you have no idea whatsoever about what they're talking about. But you shake your head and you're smiling as though you understand it because they're talking over you. This is what these people do. So we talk about the quantitative easing and we're going to go back to Iran shortly, okay? Because this has everything to do with Mr. Wesley Clark and what he said about those seven nations that America was prepared to attack and what it has to do with the dollar hegemony, okay? So bear with your brother, okay? So we just addressed what quantitative easing is. It is unconventional, an unconventional monetary policy, right? Now, according to the dictionary, the word unconventional is not based on or conforming to what is generally done or believed. So what this implies is that the economic model that they have is no longer suitable, right, for expansion. So now they're doing things off the cuff to try to expand the monetary markets and keep them from imploding. Let's go back to this, okay, because you've got to understand this according to the dictionary. Quantitative easing is an unconventional, key word, unconventional monetary policy in which a central bank purchases government security. Stop right there. So, the central banks have everything to do with what is happening in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. Those are the seven nations that General Wesley Clark, former NATO Supreme Allied Commander, spoke about when he said he went to the Pentagon right after 9/11, and how they had a list of nations that they were going to attack. Right? We're going to listen to Mr. Wesley Clark again, and then we're going to go into some about what's going on to the Middle East, but I got to lay this base for you all, okay? Bear with you, brother, okay? So remember that. The central banks, right? That is, listen to this again. I'm just going to read the first part, and then I'll go over the whole thing in just a second. Quantitative easing is an unconventional monetary policy in which a central bank purchases government securities or other securities from the market in order to increase the money supply and encourage lending and investment. So, what's significant about central banks? It has everything to do with the seven nations that Mr. Wesley Clark talked about, and we'll address that in just a minute. But he said it's unconventional, which means not based on or conforming to what is generally done or believed. So if we take what unconventional means and we apply it to quantitative easing, then we come to the understanding that the system and those who have push the system are now in a desperate mode because now they're using unconventional methods because the conventional methods no longer hold water. You understand? I hope you understand. And remember to smile. It's a very beautiful time to be a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. All praises due to Allah for the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. So let's go. So what does this have to do with the dollar? Okay? Some of you are wondering that. Well, let's go. We're going to listen to Mr. Wesley Clark again, okay? This is 2 minutes. Pay close attention to the names of the countries that he mentioned, and we go back and keep in mind that definition that I just gave you about quantitative easing. And remember what quantitative easing is. It's the influx or the saturation of the money supply also, right? Because they have to inundate the system with money. They have to keep it afloat. This is what it's saying. Quantitative easing is an unconventional monetary policy in which a central bank purchases government securities or other securities from the market in order to increase the money supply and encourage lending and investment. I bet you some of you never knew that this was directly connected with the attacks that are going on in these Muslim countries, these African countries, these Central Asian countries right now. Right? But we're going to get to that. So pay close attention. This is 2 minutes. We got to revisit Mr. Wesley Clark, former Supreme NATO Allied Commander and former three-four-star general of the U.S. Army. Pay close attention.
To worry about Iraq, not Iran. I knew why, because I'd been through the Pentagon right after 9/11. About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who used to work for me, and one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you gotta come in. You gotta come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, No. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, And by that time, we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that. He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today. And he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. I said, is it classified? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. And I saw him a year or so ago, and I said, you remember that? He said, sir, I didn't show you that memo. I didn't show it to you.
See, they made a joke out of this. But let us look at this situation, because remember the whole time that we're going through this, remember the definition that I just had given you about quantitative easing and what that is. It is an unconventional monetary policy in which a central bank, keywords, unconventional monetary policy and central bank. Those are keywords to keep your eyes on, your ears on. Keywords, okay? Quantitative easing is an unconventional monetary policy in which a central bank purchases government securities or other securities from the market in order to increase the money supply and encourage lending and investment. Now, an unconventional means not based on or conforming to what is generally done or believed. So what we are at in the monetary terms, we are at a impasse. We're at a desperate time. We're at a conjunction, I should say. We're at a time that the conventional no longer works, and they're trying anything to keep the money afloat with unconventional, right? You have things like that in your mortgages, conventional loans and unconventional loans. They're doing it. They're doing everything they can to try to keep the monetary system afloat, and they're doing everything they can to try to keep the dollar as the hegemonic currency world over, okay? Now, how does that connect with Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran? Notice Mr. Wesley Clark says at the end, and then we will finish off with Iran. So even though the other players may have been switched around in and out, they all had eyes for Iran, knowing that Iran was the most powerful one of the 7 nations that they had eyes on. So they were going to make sure that they had all of their ducks in a row when they took on Iran. This has everything to do with Donald Trump pulling out of that nuclear deal. This has everything to do with them assassinating Soleimani. This has everything to do with the military posturing around Iran and around China and around Syria. This has everything to do with it because it goes back to the central bank's monetary policies, okay? Iraq, under Saddam Hussein, did away with the central banks. Did you hear me? Iraq, under Saddam Hussein, did away with the Western Central Bank. Lebanon, which was an outpost of Syria, had no central bank. Lebanon's central bank was connected to Syria's bank, which Syria had no central bank. You understand? Libya, under the leader of the Great Lion of Africa, Muammar Gaddafi, he did away with Western monetary policy, right? And they didn't have a central bank as such. And that's why the nation flourished, and it was the richest nation on the Mediterranean, bar none. Look at it today. So bombing them, they did away with the independence, the economic independence, and they installed, just like they did as soon as they went into Iraq, they installed central banks. And this is what they tried to do in Syria. This is what they're over in Somalia fighting to try to maintain, as they say, the terrorists. How the hell can they be terrorists? And they're from Somalia, and you got a military base that is illegal on their territory that they're fighting to expel. How the hell can they be the terrorists? Huh? See? Wordplay. Word speak. Sudan. They had eyes on Sudan over a decade ago, 2 decades ago. Sudan was, at the time, the largest nation in Africa. And before it's breaking up, it was, I believe, roughly half the size of the United States. Sudan, of the main part of the United States, it was roughly half the size of the United States. But it had unlimited natural resources, right? And they went to move Bashar, the former president who came to power through a bloodless military coup, removed him because he was leaning more towards Russia and China in the end, and he wanted to expel all Israeli agents out of the northern part of Africa. This is true. Now, you can go read this stuff. I'm not making this stuff up, brothers and sisters. So, and for those of you who are listening, sometimes I'll stop. I told you my tongue is still swollen. I'll stop and get a little dab of water on my tongue, okay? So I'm not tongue-tied. So bear with me. So listen. So America was demanding free Darfur. You see, they're doing the same thing with Tibet, right? The same thing goes. They use these tactics the world over. These are tactics that they use to put to delegitimize the legitimate governments and then put them on human rights lists, illegal human rights lists, so that they can sanction these nations, so that they can weaken these nations and then bring these nations to the negotiation table. And after these nations bow at negotiating, then they can do what they will with these nations and steal off or siphon off the resources. So isn't it ironic that Somalia was on the list? Why? Because America never forgave Somalia when they beat the U.S. Special Forces. And they drugged the U.S. Special Forces bodies through the streets and slapping them in the face with shoes. They had them tied to jeeps. And they drugged their bodies through the streets, through the main streets, because America was in there trying to install someone she wanted, and she was trying to destabilize the situation, and they were caught red-handed. And the Somalis went after these special forces and pinned them down. And when they overtook them, they killed and they tortured them, they killed them. And they drug them through the street as a message to America and the Western pawns that were in the country that this would happen to you, and America never forgave them for that. And that's why she's raising hell over there right now, the same as she never forgave Gaddafi for kicking out America's largest base in Africa that was once in Libya that was reopened as soon as Gaddafi was overthrown. You understand me? All of this is connected to the monetary policy. All of this is connected to the geo-posturing and positioning of military forces around the globe. We're watching the economic collapse of America and the Western world and the loss of dollar hegemony. It's in real time, black man and black woman. So, Sudan, as I said, was roughly half the size of the United States. But it has all of these untapped minerals. And America was scared that China and Russia was going to get them. Germany, look, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad talks about wicked Germany, how undercover Germany is, right? Well, long before there was a vote on Sudan, about the independence of South Sudan, Germany had already prepared the currency years in advance. So if you're not pushing this thing, how the hell do you know the outcome of the referendum that was that you kept pushing for years? They had already set up a central bank model to be imposed upon South Sudan. They had already had the currency printed up for years, before there was even an agreement for a referendum on South Sudan's freedom. Huh? And they wanted Darfur. It was central and key in their policy. But they didn't get Darfur. And so they had to overthrow Bashar. But Darfur has all these untapped mines. I'm talking about they have plenty. Go do your research. Google about Darfur's untapped minerals and stuff and untapped resources. Huge supplies of them. And this is what the Western world, not just America, but Germany and Italy and France and Britain, this is what they went after. So that they can strengthen their monetary policy. Because the jig is up. The jig was up. They had no more gold and silver in their banks, in their vaults. All right? And remember that the London Stock Exchange is tied to the New York Stock Exchange. If one falls, the other one falls. If one nation collapses, the other one collapses. These are the two daughters of Babylon that was predicted in the Bible. All right? If you don't believe me, I believe there's an article on Sputnik. Let me go to Sputnik real quick. Okay, listen to this. Okay? If you don't believe what I'm saying about this, listen to this article. This is an article for today. And I have never read the article. I just see the headline. So I'm going to read part of it to you. The headline is this: world economy would collapse the city of London stopped laundering money. Woo! Laundering money, says HSBC whistleblower. Says laundering. Did you hear that? So the world economy would collapse. All right? Now, I tell you, what's crazy about this is they can say this and none of you flinch, none of you say a word. Now, let's go to this. Let's see what they're saying publicly that you didn't even grasp, that it went right over your head. Let's read this headline of the article again. World economy would collapse if City of London stopped laundering money, says HSBC whistleblower. Well, if that is the case, then we must find out the meaning, the true meaning of money laundering, or laundering money. Money. And according to the dictionary, it means the concealment of the origins of illegally obtained money. So stop right there. Let's go back to this again. I'm going to go back to the definition because it's a little bit longer than that. But just in that, listen to what it says. World economy would collapse if City of London stopped laundering money, says HSBC whistleblower. So they're telling you right now that London or anyone else that's connected with London, right, they're illegally what? Obtaining money, right? Illegally. And this is how they keep the parasitic monetary order going. Okay? Money laundering means the concealment of the origins of illegally obtained money, typically by means of transfers involving foreign banks or legitimate businesses. So now we talk about foreign banks. What is it? What about foreign banks? What are their policies? Huh? What is their monetary policy? What are the banks, the foreign banks, the central banks? What is their monetary policy? Talk to me. The quantitative easing is an unconventional or illegal monetary policy in which a central bank purchases government securities or other securities from the market in order to increase the money supply and encourage lending and investment. But the thing about it is you get no understanding or no information on where the money came from. What is that called? Money laundering, right? According to the definition. Oh, black woman, black woman. It's a very beautiful time to be a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. Let's go further on this. Man, this took me down the road. I wasn't even planning on going. So, we get an understanding of what took place in Iraq. And remember that the first day when America had cleared Iraq of the central government, the first thing they did the first day was secure the oil fields. So that right there lets you know. They didn't secure the hospitals. They didn't secure the nursing homes, right? They didn't secure anything but the oil fields first. They went in to secure the oil fields. What is Trump talking about in Syria? Our troops are there to do what? Secure the oil fields. All right? Come on, talk to me. So that was their main purpose, main goal. And even though Iraq had made tens of billions of dollars by switching from selling their oil in dollars to the euro, upon America dethroning Saddam and having him on the run, America installed a puppet regime and then immediately switched from the euro back to the dollar, causing a massive drop in currency value. In Iraq's currency, the Iraqi dinar, and it also caused a collapse in currency reserves in Iraq and caused them to lose tens of billions of dollars in investment money, even though they had no legitimate right to do it. Right? So, you hear that? So, we hear that. So, we're on Sudan. So, after the referendum, before the referendum, they had all of this stuff. Upon the referendum being agreed to, Germany, Italy, France, the United States, Great Britain, and a few other colonial powers had already shipped cargo planes full of currency that would be the South Sudan's currency to South Sudan. Now, I'm not the smartest person in the world, and I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, right? But how the hell can you become an independent nation allowing other nations to print your currency for you? talk to me. Huh? Because you're always at their whim. No matter what, they can determine whatever they want if they are the ones supplying you with the currency. That's what they did to Syria. In the war, they stopped the supply of Syrian currency to Syria. So what Russia did, because what they were trying to do is not only isolate Syria's economy, they were trying to implode it to help the people rise up against the person that they had voted for to be the president. So Russia and China came up, and they came in with printing presses to help Syria print their own money. And you see how things have now leveled off. You see that? But then we go to the big one. It says, and then we'll finish off with Iran. Where are we at right now? Huh? Geopolitically, where's the news talking about constantly? Right now. We already know that Iraq has been attacked by America and occupied by America. We know that Lebanon has been in upheavals over U.S. and Israeli policies to destabilize the legitimate governments there so that they can destabilize Hezbollah. We already know that Libya has been bombed back to the Stone Age, and there's a uncivil war going on. We know that Somalia is in the death throes of American colonialism, right? We know that Syria now is being partly occupied by America, Great Britain, France, Germany, and other colonial powers, right? But where are we now? We look at Sudan. Sudan, the government of Sudan has been overthrown, and an Israeli-leaning, Western-leaning government has been put into power after America assured them their sanctions would be relieved and that they would have an influx of investment money from the Western world. That's what took place, right? So where are we now? Talking about this economic collapse and the loss of dollar hegemony. We are right on the doorsteps of war with Iran. Is that not right? Huh? Right where Wesley Clark had told you this. Brother Rashid, keep your hand up. I'm going to get to you, but I need to break this stuff down real quick, okay? And then I'll come back to you. So, right where Mr. Wesley Clark, former Supreme NATO ally commander, had warned you about. So where does this lead us, and what does this have to do with dollar hegemony? And why Iran? Right? Well, for you to understand that, right, we have to go somewhere. Remember I played a 20 or 40 second clip a few days ago about John Kerry, but they never let John Kerry speak on the clip. The woman was just telling you what John Kerry said, right? So today I'm going to revisit the clip, okay? And today you will hear what John Kerry says about the JPCOA or the JCPOA, talking about the nuclear agreement that Iran signed with Russia, signed with America and European nations, right? And he's going to talk about the consequences of America pulling out of that. And all while you hear about the consequences of that, I want you to also look at what Trump did. He pulled out of that deal. The same thing Kerry warned that would happen, Trump is doing. That if America pulled out of the deal, he's telling you it's almost insanity for America to pull out the deal, then sanction Iran and sanction nations that had agreed with America under pressure to do this with Iran and then wage war against Iran and then try to blackmail or whitemail other nations. He said, my dear friends, this is indeed a recipe for the end of America, the dollar, as the world reserve currency. And I'm paraphrasing, right? But all of this is connected. This is why you see the volatile markets. This is why you see the volatility in government heads and minds and how they speak on one side of their mouth and the next few seconds they're speaking on the other side of their mouth. This is a very, very intense time because this man in Washington, D.C., and the people in Brussels, and the people in Berlin, and the people in Paris, and the people in London, all of them are fighting for their survival because they know if America goes down, boom goes the dynamite for the Western world. Because she is the main and the strongest pillar of colonialism and white domination the world over. But I want you to keep in mind what I said to you about what Trump has done and then demands that Iran, no nation buys Iran's oil, no nation trades with Iran, no nation does this under threat of sanctions. And then she threatens Iran with war and says Iran has been misbehaving, and Iran has been threatening nations, and Iran has been invading nations. And all one has to do is look at her track record. Keep all of this in mind as you listen to Mr. Kerry. At the time, he was the Secretary of State, and he had won the presidential election when he ran for president. And they beat him out of his presidency, and I think he was still bitter that they did him like that. I think he's still bitter about that. But listen, I want you to pay close attention to this. I think this is the one right here. Listen, it's about 3 minutes and 48 seconds. And I might have to play part of it again if I have to hit a point on you, but I want you to pay close attention because this has everything to do with London. It has everything to do with the New York Stock Exchange. It has everything to do with the maintaining of dollar hegemony, because without dollar hegemony, the military juggernaut that is America and NATO comes to a grinding and screeching halt. You understand? Pay close attention to what Kerry has to say.
They mastered the fuel cycle. When people say, oh my gosh, I'm worried about what happens in year 15 or 20, they may become a nuclear threshold nation. Folks, they are a nuclear threshold nation today. They became that. And they became that while we had a policy of no enrichment. A country that's mastered the fuel cycle.
People say, oh, we'll get the 5+1 together again and negotiate a better deal. You're beginning to deal with that. Will you deal with the problem of getting that 5+1 again to get on the same position you're in now?
One of the reasons, Sir Harry, that
I stopped this for a minute.
It was important to move forward with this.
I stopped this for a minute. There's some key here. They're talking about the insanity of trying to pulling out of the deal and trying to force Iran to negotiate another deal. What the hell is Trump doing right now? I'm asking you these things. Because what he's warning about is actually in real time, right here, right now. This is people who are insane. These are people who are insane. They know the consequences, yet they still go forward because they believe, I am, and there is none other. The same thought that Nebuchadnezzar had that cost him his empire. The same thought that Pharaoh of ancient Egypt had that cost him his dynasty. This is the same thought that Mr. Trump and his officials under him have that is costing them the American Republic. Okay? I want you to listen to this good. Please. I'm going to go back to this. I want you to listen to this.
They mastered the fuel cycle. When people say, oh my gosh, I'm worried about what happens in year 15 or 20, they may become a nuclear threshold nation. Folks, they are a nuclear threshold nation today. They became that. And they became that while we had a policy of no enrichment. A country that's mastered the fuel cycle.
People say, oh, we'll get the 5+1 together again and negotiate a better deal. You're beginning to deal with that. Will you deal with the problem of getting that 5+1 again to get on the same position you're in now?
One of the reasons, Sir Harry, that we felt it was important to move forward with this negotiation is the fact that the sanctions was already framed. Remember, folks, we don't trade with Iran. We have a primary embargo. And by the way, the primary embargo will stay. But if everybody thinks, oh, no, we're just tough, the United States of America, we have our secondary sanctions, we can force people to do what we want. I actually heard that argument on television this morning. I've heard it from a number of the organizations that are working that are opposed to this agreement. They're spreading the word, America is strong enough, our banks are tough enough, we can just bring the hammer down and force our friends to do what we want them to. Well, look, a lot of business people in this room. Are you kidding me? The United States is going to start sanctioning our allies and their banks and their businesses because we...
So, you hear what he said? I'm stopping it because we're going to replay it. But do you hear what he said? Are you serious? What is Trump doing? He's threatening his European allies too, right? He's not just threatening Russia and China and Iran. He's threatening everybody under the threat of sanctions, right? And Kerry is sitting there at a world forum. Listen to me good. He's at a world forum with business dignitaries and military officials and geostrategists. And he's talking to them. And he said, are you serious? Because he couldn't fathom the madness of this from his own people. But they have been struck with madness by Almighty God Allah to do the exact thing that he warned his own government not to do. You understand? Pay close to this. I got to play this because we have to get to the heart and the meat of the bone. I want you to listen to it over again, and I'm going to let it play all the way through. But I have to stop this stuff to meet the hit points, okay? Because some of us may overlook those points. And I'm not just talking to an audience of 10 people. I'm not just talking to an audience of 100 people. I'm not talking to an audience of 1,000 people. We are listened to in 170-some countries. So at one point or another, people from 170-some countries will listen to this show. And so I want to hit home. I want to hit this stuff and make everybody see what is really taking place so that they can understand the time and what is being done in this time and what must be done in this time. All right? Man, I'm telling you, with the blueprint, with the Rosetta Stone called Elijah Muhammad, you can't go wrong. Right? Ha ha, smile. You know God and his messenger love you. Let's go further. All right? Here we go. If it allows us to play this time, they might start playing games on us. Here we go. Let's try it again.
They mastered the fuel cycle. When people say, oh my gosh, I'm worried about what happens in year 15 or 20, they may become a nuclear threshold nation. Folks, they are a nuclear threshold nation today. They became that. And they became that while we had a policy of no enrichment. A country that's mastered the fuel cycle.
People say, oh, we'll get the 5+1 together again and negotiate a better deal. You're beginning to deal with that. Will you deal with the problem of getting that 5+1 again to get on the same position you're in now?
One of the reasons, Sir Harry, that we felt it was important to move forward with this negotiation is the fact that the sanctions was already framed. Remember, folks, we don't trade with Iran. We have a primary embargo. And by the way, the primary embargo will stay. But if everybody thinks, oh, no, we're just tough. The United States of America, we have our secondary sanctions. We can force people to do what we want. I actually heard that argument on television this morning. I've heard it from a number of the organizations that are working that are opposed to this agreement. They're spreading the word. America is strong enough. Our banks are tough enough. We can just bring the hammer down and force our friends to do what we want them to. Well, look, a lot of business people in this room. Are you kidding me? The United States is going to start sanctioning our allies and their banks and their businesses because we walked away from a deal and we're going to force them to do what we want them to do even though they agreed to the deal we came to? Are you kidding? That is a recipe, quickly, my friends, for them to walk away from Ukraine, where they are already very dicey and ready to say, well, we've done our bit. They were ready, in many cases, to say, well, we're the ones paying the price for your sanctions. It was Obama who went out and actually put together a sanctions regime that had an impact. I went to China. We persuaded China, don't buy more oil. We persuaded India and other countries to step back. Can you imagine trying to sanction them after persuading them to put in place sanctions to bring Iran to the negotiating table? And when they have not only come to the table, but they made a deal, we turn around and nix the deal and then tell them you're going to have to obey our rules on the sanctions anyway. That is a recipe very quickly, my friends, business people here, for the American dollar to cease to be the reserve currency of the world, which is already bubbling out there. And if the United
States... So, I stopped it there. That's the heart of what I wanted. Now, everything that he warned that would be the recipes for the dollar to cease to be the world's trade currency, right? Trump has done. Is that not right? Is he not threatening everybody? Did he not pull out of the deal? Is he not demanding that Iran comes back to the table to renegotiate a deal that America forced others into? Huh? Is he not threatening to sanction everybody that don't agree with him? And is he not waging war to try to pursue his goals of total hegemony? Well, you know, as this clip was playing, something got in my head. And something said, just Google Trump pulls out of the nuclear deal. So I Googled it, and I come across an article about Obama, President Obama. And now we just heard Kerry warn Trump of the consequences economically of pulling out of this deal and the insanity of it, right? See, this shows you that God has their mind. This shows you that they have been smitten with derision, as the book tells you what happened to them in these last days. So we look at Obama and it's NBCnews.com. It's an old article, and I haven't read it. I'm just looking at it. The picture on this article has Obama as he was still in the presidency, and Trump as he was the president. As he won the president, they're both sitting at the White House together, and Trump looking like a little boy, and Obama exuding confidence. Now I don't like neither one of these cats at all. Trump is helping to bring down America, so I might have a little favoritism towards him. Obama did a lot of underhanded policies that had the greatest detriment to black people that we've seen in modern history. But at least Trump is helping to bring down America, because if America doesn't fall, the black man and woman here in America, I don't care how much you march, protest, and talk about freedom and pump your fist, if America's dollar does not fall, you won't go free. This is a key criteria for the freedom and the separation of black here in America from the domination of whites and others. The dollar must fall. The economy must go into the crapper. All of this stuff must take place so that you can be an independent and free people, as other people have enjoyed independence and freedom around the globe. This is a must. This is a prerequisite for that. So I might be leaning more towards the Trump. You understand? Don't be blinded by political loyalties, because this whole political system is unloyal to you. But listen to what it says here. Obama, others warn Trump. Listen to this good. This is the headline. Obama and others warn Trump that pulling out of Iran nuclear deal could lead to war. The choice we face is ultimately between diplomacy or some form of war, then President Obama said in 2015. Now, he says, to supporters of the Iran nuclear deal, it is no surprise that President Donald Trump is now facing a potential war with Iran. Long before Trump was elected, advocates of the nuclear agreement, including then President Barack Obama, French President Emmanuel Macron, and others, had argued that abandoning the accord carried grave risk that could lead to an armed conflict. So this didn't come out of nowhere. He knew the consequences of this stuff. And now he's dealing with the ramifications of his own arrogant and hubris policies. You understand me? This stuff didn't come out of thin air. But, of course, the white man think that all the laws of nature don't apply to them. As I have done, so shall it be done. Oh, we can kill up people and we can take their lands. But if somebody kill us, it's an atrocity. It's an affront to humanity. We've lost 300 people on 9/11, and then you go and bomb 3 million people. But the 3 million didn't equal the 300, even though the 300 was a blowback from your policies. You see the arrogance of them? My stuff, though. We shall always remember 9/11. Never forget. Black people say, what about slavery? Oh, that was in the past. That was in the past. We got to get over that. Huh. Even though you were treated the worst in the annals of human history by these people. Huh? We got to get over that. Well, that only happened back then. Then you go start lining up events that took. Well, that happened back then. Well, that happened. Oh, that nigga deserved it. Oh, no, this happened here. Oh, we gotta look past that. All of us are not like that. But they leave a trail of this disgust and murder and death and theft and occupation and war and bloodshed. Their history is written in blood. What shall thou make except that which caused mischief and the shedding of blood? This is the question that was asked. These people surely have shed the blood of man and mankind. Is that not right? And they're doing it to try to maintain dollar hegemony. Before I go into another clip, before I read anything else, I know Brother Rashid has been waiting patiently. I'm going to have to bring this brother in. Brother Rashid, I say unto you, As-salamu alaykum.
Well, Islam, brother, can you hear me?
Yeah, brother, we can hear you good. How's it going, my brother?
Brother, you're doing a good job with this, brother. You know, most of our people don't understand it. The white man's society, like the man said, his dollar is what fuels everything. You know, it would be that if you lay out a problem, you find a solution to the problem. The solution to the problem for everybody else that's not from Europe or the Western world would be to get off it. If his dollar is what got you tied down, and it's putting a burden on your society, then the smart thing to do is to get off his dollar.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
As I said it before, the Asian nation should get, and like what they got a euro, they should make an Asian, Asia or whatever it is, an Asian currency, and back it by gold, and the euro and the dollar be no good tomorrow.
Well, they're moving towards that with the yuan. That's why Asian, that's why they do more of their trading now in yuan than they do in euro or dollars. And that's the largest trading block in the world.
They should do that. Remember, Iran, Iraq, see, all, that's West Asia, right?
Yeah.
All of them should be able and have your pool of your currency in this Asia or whatever it is, and then he can sanction you till the cows come home. I'm not using any of your money.
That's right.
As you said before, sanction only mean that the money that you bought, say like you bought a 100 barrels of oil from me, then the money that I gave you, I'm saying that money is no good. Well, anybody with any sense was saying, well, if you can do that to me, then I don't want to buy your, I don't want none of your money.
But that's the bit, as I say all the time, that's one of the greatest cons this white man came up with. I'm going to print some, I'm going to get some wood, I'm going to thin it out, and I'm going to make some paper. I'm going to put some beautiful designs on it, and I'm going to put some denominations that I feel should be on there and put some pretty little colors in it, and then I'm going to give it to you and tell you what your resources are worth, and then you're going to give me the unrefined resources. Then when you make me mad, I'm going to sanction you and tell you that the money that I gave you ain't worth nothing, so now I got your resources, and you don't have nothing but worthless paper. That's a con, brother. That's one of the greatest cons ever come up with, brother.
And that's definitely him, a con man. They bought one of the best con men that they are and made him president. As you were saying about the quantitative easing, right?
Yes, sir.
It's a DVD called The Money Master, and it talks about this factional a reserve banking system, where he can take $100 and $100 of worthless money, right, and then loan that $100 out 10 times.
Yep.
Now if me and you go and do something like that, the Bunko Squad will come and throw us up for.
Yes, sir.
The
fraud. They call it fraud.
Is a scheme.
Yeah.
And if anybody in his right mind would get into parts of it, like you said, the people that tried to get out of it, the white man wouldn't attack them and overthrew their country. Well, then, like I'm saying, do it with the smart thing to do with the Asian is put it in China, because China's a little bit too big to slap down.
Yeah.
And just start dealing with them. Well, I'm going to sanction you. And Europe is not the only place on the planet that make goods and services. But the problem is that most of those people over there, they do not want to accept the judgment that God put out.
That's the main thing.
It has been revealed. And if you look over his history, there's no arguing with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The white man is the devil. several years ago, they said that they had a couple of scholars and a scientist said that this white people are basically came out about 6,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And then they never tell you how they came out about it. It just happened and they was here. No, the menu said it was designed for a reason. And the man that was that put him, he made an evil man. Once again, the devil that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is talking about is not up under the ground with a red suit on and a tail and horns roasting you in a fire that would never burn you up. Many say that he's a grafted. That's all the devil means. It don't mean anything other than being a grafted man. And he put all of these labels and all of this stuff on it to make you think, got your mind, like the minion say, so far in spook that you got the bottomless pit, and he a bottomless pit that never stopped. All it is sad to see and watching too much television.
Yeah.
But what the,
and a lot of that is folklore. A lot of that is folklore from Europe also, because a lot of people don't realize that some of this stuff that they get about the devil came from when white people were in the caves. We know that white people, what is it, two in every three or three in every five white people are born with tails. And as they, when they were in the caves, they would have tails and their tails would grow. We know that after they would kill something, they would put horns, they would make hats. You see the Vikings, hats with horns, right? And after they kill stuff, they would rub their bodies down with the blood of the kill that they had. So it comes with this, and they had the little staff or whatever. That's your pitchfork. This, and the caves in Europe are more like caverns or something that you walk into. So this is what this comes from. This stems from folklore of old, but the white man is truly, he's telling you who he is because that is his nature. That's what he did when he stayed in the caves of Europe. He painted his body with red paint. He put the horns of his prey on his head. He had a tail, right? And he lived in the cave. And how did he keep himself warm? Through fire. Oh, brother, I'm telling you, it's a beautiful time.
The dogs to protect him. That's how the dog became the man's best friend. The dogs protecting him.
And he was sleeping with them dogs too, like he is doing today. But that's another story for the Star and Cousin Report to address. But go ahead, finish your point, brother. I digress, and then we'll go back to this.
I'm gonna let you get back to the whole thing in a second. But main thing, as I was thinking when you was talking about all of this geopolitical stuff, I was thinking what the messenger said. The menu was talking about that he would have to fight Russia in a 40-year mission. The messenger never said they were going to have to fight the Soviet Union.
That's right.
The Soviet Union was just as powerful as America. So if Elijah Muhammad said back in the 40s and the 50s that they were going to have to fight Russia, and Russia could the Soviet Union could nuke everybody just as – matter of fact, more than America could, then he had to know that the Soviet Union was going to collapse.
That's right.
Russia would be off to herself, right, like it is now. Well, like we were saying, watching before, Russia is the one that now is the one that's pushing all of the countries to get off the dollar system. They are the main ones saying it. No. You don't do it. Don't get on the dollar. Don't accept none of this money. We want to do Russia buying more gold than anybody. it lets you know that Elijah Muhammad was on time, baby. And if you understand
sir.
It, see, like I'm saying, the most of the world want to reject what was said, but you got to sit back and look at the repercussions of what he said. This man, this American white man, is trying, like you say, trying to dominate the whole entire earth. And if he don't do it, he gonna blow up the. I'll kill everybody. That's the mentality that he has. If you don't do as I'm saying, I'll kill you. But our God is so wise and stuff, brother. He's bringing him down little by little, like we said before. That this the menu said that he would try to get peace, but the judgment would be set.
That's right.
GCOP, this Iran nuclear deal, that was the peace that the messenger was talking about, from what we can see. That he made an agreement to bring Iran back into the fold, and they and he got this Rouhani and Zaire for Western people. It's you know, you got in Iran, you got people that want to go for the east and people want to go for the west. These people, they negotiated this deal to bring Iran back into the western fold, and they thought that they had succeeded. Iran was smiling, and Kerry was smiling, and Zarif was smiling, but they didn't. They don't know the future like the Lord of the World did.
That's right.
What do you say? The judgment has been set.
It's set. That's right.
The Trump came in and ruined the whole thing, and everything that John Kerry was saying not to do, Trump is doing. Right?
That's right. That's right.
He's
I'm going to read a little bit more of that in a second. I'm going to read a little bit more of that because I was scanning down. Go ahead.
He even threatened his European allies to get out of the JCP and to bring the Iran sanctions back in full force, and then they came up last night and said that Trump threatened them, if you don't do it, I'm going to
tear them apart. Same thing that Kerry and Obama don't want them not to do, because it would mean the end of the dollar. He has put everything in motion. So my point is this. If Obama and Kerry and all of his administration had the foresight to see that these actions would lead to the collapse of the dollar, right? The loss of dollar hegemony globally, right? Then if we see Trump and his administration enacting every one of the things, the no-nos that Obama them said don't do or else it will lead to, what else do you expect to happen after this? The dollar must collapse.
That's right. And you see, John Kerry and Obama, they pretty sharp. You know, they're college-educated people. They're pretty sharp. And the Trump crowd, the Trump crowd, what did the secretary say? Hell, I don't think he can even read.
Yeah.
They're not sharp enough.
Yeah, man, I remember that.
These mental that's going to come out and do everything that he said not to do. And all I say is, all praise is due to Allah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, brother.
He warned us that this was coming. And then everybody laughed.
Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Well, I love the Lord. That was a good one, brother Rashid. You brought to mind. They did say that. All praise is due to Allah. For those of you who may be just joining us, I advise you all to, when this show is over, to go back and listen to this show from beginning. It's so much stuff that we laid out for you in the beginning of the show up until this point. We played you clips. We read you little things. We went into scripture. We showed you this in the geopolitical realm, the economic realm. We went into the dictionary. There's so much that you have to digest. So we put it out there in a form that is palatable to your taste. And I'm asking you to go back, if you just joined us, go back and listen to the show from the start, or you're going to miss a lot of information, a wealth of information for you. But let's go back to something, as Brother Rashid was talking about. Anyway, they did say that about him. I don't even think the fella could read. But as the article I was reading for you all, as Obama, as we played the clip of John Kerry warning the outcome of these same actions that Trump and his administration are carrying out, and I started reading to you what Obama and others have said. So I'm going to read this again to you, but I'm going to read a little bit more so that you can understand the consequences of this, not just the collapse of the dollar, but war. This is what we've been warning you about for since we've been on the air almost 11 years. And do you see how on time we are? Everything that we have told you, you can point to. Everything. Everything. This should tell you something. All you have to do is weigh the shows on a scale of facts. But you're too arrogant for that. But let's go to this. Obama and others warned Trump that pulling out of Iran nuke deal could lead to war. The choice we face is ultimately between diplomacy or some form of war, then President Barack Obama said in 2015. Now, this is by Dan DeLuce. He says this. He's writing this article, and this is what he says. To supporters of the Iran nuclear deal, it's no surprise that President Donald Trump is now facing a potential war with Iran. so it's no surprise. Then why the hell they keep acting like they're surprised? But let's go further. Long before Trump was elected, advocates of the nuclear agreement, including then-President Barack Obama, French President Emmanuel Macron, and others, had argued that abandoning the accord carried grave risks that could lead to an armed conflict. So let's not mince words. The choice we face is ultimately between diplomacy or some form of war. Stop right there. So if they are laying this out back then, and Trump pulls out the nuclear deal, and everybody says that we're on the cusp of war, but we didn't see this coming, how the hell can you square that up when they are warning you the outcome of these policies that Trump are enacting right now will lead directly to the thing that the people are acting so afraid of and acting like they didn't see coming? He says, so let's not mince words. The choice we face is ultimately between diplomacy or some form of war. Maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not 3 months from now. Listen to what he said. This is Obama. And remember, he was getting out of the White House, right? This is what he says. So let's not mince words. The choice we face is ultimately between diplomacy or some form of war. Maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not 3 months from now, but soon. Obama said in a speech in 2015, defending the deal before a congressional vote. Trump, as a candidate, vowed to dump what he called the worst deal ever. And he made good on his promise in 2018. A year later, Trump is openly discussing the pros and cons of bombing Iran. Now, let me stop right there for a minute. A day before, something kept telling me, right before they killed General Soleimani. I didn't want to do a premium article, but I wound up doing two premium articles that day, I believe. And one premium article that I did, I forget the name of it, but it was about Persia. And I was talking about Iran, but I was using the name Persia, okay? And I was talking about America. Let me try to pull it up real quick for you while I'm talking to you. And I want to give you the exact name of the article, okay? I got about 20 screens up on two different things. Okay, here it is right here. This article came up. I wrote the article the day before, and it came up a few hours before Soleimani was killed. And in this, I was talking about the moves that they would take to try to provoke war, and what it would lead to. It would actually lead to the exposure of America being a collapsing empire. Their attack on Iran would lead to that. The name of the article in my premium content is called "The U.S. Will Move to Conquer Persia, and This Will Expose the Collapsing Empire." What's going on right now? I'm asking you this. What is going on right now? What did they do? They committed a flagrant and direct and open act of war by killing not only a military man of the Iranian Islamic Republic, but also a dignitary that was sent there by the highest authority of the land of Iran. That's an open and flagrant act of war, right? And now we are met with all of these what-ifs and why. Because of Trump's policies, right? And the world is questioning his sanity. They don't even think he's rational. And America is being exposed for her hollowness and her empty rhetoric about human rights and values and sovereignty of nations and all of this. This is being exposed. Everybody is seeing this, and now the nations are moving more and more. You thought they were walking toward the exit doors from the dollar. Now they're running toward the exit doors for the dollar, and they're all trying to collect gold and silver and all kinds of precious minerals and all kinds of investments to try to shun the dollar. Now, God put that on my mind that day. Because I didn't want to do a premium article, and it just so happened to be the first premium article, the first article that I had wrote that day. And I put it to the side, and I said, you know what, I ought to release it now. And I said, no, I'll release it in a couple hours. So I put it on a time step to release a couple of hours. And right after it released, boom, they had killed Soleimani, and people were talking about the threat of war and how America has shown itself to be an international pariah. And so my article, that I hit the nail on the head with everything, but it wasn't me. It was me looking through the Rosetta Stone, which is Elijah Muhammad. And I could see these things. I could see them happening in real time. Brothers and sisters, I'm telling you, go to my premium article. The stuff that I'm saying, you'll see it right now in the news, or you have seen it happening in the news after the articles come out. This is real, real-time stuff. So, again, we're watching this, and I'm reading this, and we've come to this point. So let's not mince words. The choice we face is ultimately between diplomacy or some form of war, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not 3 months from now on, but soon, Obama said in a speech in 2015 defending the deal before a congressional vote. Trump, as a candidate, vowed to dump what he called the worst deal ever, and he made good on his promise in 2018. A year later, Trump is openly discussing the pros and cons of bombing Iran. On Friday, the president said in a tweet that he had ordered and then called off a military strike against Iran after Tehran shot down a U.S. surveillance drone over the Straits of Hormuz. Now, that is really Iranian territorial water. How the hell are you going to bomb somebody because they shot down your military projectile over their airspace, over their waterways? That's insanity. But let's go further. In his 2015 speech, Obama said that without an agreement limiting Iran's nuclear program in return for U.S. sanctions relief, any U.S. administration would be left with only one option to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon: another war in the Middle East. What did we tell you was coming? That war, that regional war in the MENA area. MENA, that's my acronym. The Middle Eastern North African region. The MENA. The messenger said that that was going to take place. Why the hell do you see the nations doubling down and deploying more weapons? Are they talking about, we're going to redeploy out of the Middle East? Well, why the hell are you putting in more destructive weapons? Why are you putting in your best of your best and your baddest of your baddest fighting troops, huh? Because they see something coming. Prophecy cannot be overcome. I don't care how much you try. Now, remember all of this, and to give you a backdrop, we got to listen to John Kerry again, okay? We got to listen to him again, and this puts it all in perspective. Now, remember again, brothers and sisters, sometimes I do this stuff over and over again so that you can understand where we are. We got to do a part two because I got some more clips talking about Soleimani and the dollar and the collapse and all this stuff. We got to do a part two because I see the time running down. And I want you all to be very mindful of these things, that where we're headed is a total economic collapse. And when I'm telling you a total economic collapse, I'm talking about Mad Max style and a total economic collapse. Well, all of the necessities that you once took for granted, you won't take for granted again. Where the things that you used to just toss away, you'll be looking to eat, looking to find. Because when the dollar ceases to be the world's reserve currency, and it's not that far away from it, and when the debt of America is recognized globally, which is not that far away from it, and when the monetary system, the policies in this system, catches a black swan and the blowback becomes unbearable, and we're not that far away from this, you will look to this and you'll say, man, they told me the truth. You're looking at the economic collapse of America in the Western world and the loss of the dollar hegemony globally. I want you to listen again to Mr. John Kerry, all while keeping in mind the insane and crazy lunatic and berserker type policies that Mr. Donald Trump is putting in words, okay?
They mastered the fuel cycle. When people say, oh my gosh, I'm worried about what happens in year 15 or 20, they may become a nuclear threshold nation. Folks, they are a nuclear threshold nation today. They became that. And they became that while we had a policy of no enrichment. A country that's mastered the fuel cycle.
People say, oh, we've got the 5+1 together again and negotiate a better deal. You're beginning to deal with that. Will you deal with the problem of getting that 5+1 again to get on the same position you're in now?
One of the reasons, Sir Harry, that we felt it was important to move forward with this negotiation is the fact that the sanctions was already framed. Remember, folks, we don't trade with Iran. We have a primary embargo. And by the way, the primary embargo will stay. But if everybody thinks, oh, no, we're just tough, the United States of America, we have our secondary sanctions, we can force people to do what we want. I actually heard that argument on television this morning. I've heard it from a number of the organizations that are working that are opposed to this agreement. They're spreading the word, America is strong enough, our banks are tough enough, we can just bring the hammer down and force our friends to do what we want them to. Well, look, a lot of business people in this room. Are you kidding me? The United States is going to start sanctioning our allies and their banks and their businesses because we walked away from a deal and we're going to force them to do what we want them to do even though they agreed to the deal we came to? Are you kidding? That is a recipe, quickly, my friends, for them to walk away from Ukraine, where they are already very dicey and ready to say, well, we've done our bit. They were ready, in many cases, to say, well, we're the ones paying the price for your sanctions. It was Obama who went out and actually put together a sanctions regime that had an impact. I went to China. We persuaded China, don't buy more oil. We persuaded India and other countries to step back. Can you imagine trying to sanction them after persuading them to put in place sanctions to bring Iran to the negotiating table? And when they have not only come to the table, but they made a deal, we turn around and nix the deal and then tell them you're going to have to obey our rules on the sanctions anyway. That is a recipe very quickly, my friends, business people here, for the American dollar to cease to be the reserve currency of the world, which is already bubbling out there. And if the United States were to behave that way, not only would we have lost them with respect to the sanctions, but we will lose their support if we have to use military action. Can you imagine Israel and the United States taking military action because we forced a situation where Iran goes back to what it was doing because we wouldn't live by the deal that we already agreed to, which the United Nations has already approved 15-0 in the Security Council? One thing you can't bomb away here, folks, is knowledge. The missile sanctions for 8 years, the arms sanctions for 5 years. The issue here is, can you build the kind of international support structure that we built to make it really meaningful? We had our sanctions in place for quite a few years. It didn't get the job done. It wasn't until we got everybody else at the table, and more importantly, till we got a lot of countries that do trade with Iran to stop the trading, that had the impact.
So you heard it from John Kerry as he was the Secretary of State. You heard it from Obama's mouth, as I read to you, as he was still the President of the United States. And we see through Trump's action, he is determined to do everything that's diametrically opposed to the warnings that they issued to the American Republic and to the American government as they were preparing to leave the American government. They were warning them of the consequences of pulling out of that deal. And what do we see happen? So, as Brother Rashid humbly reminded me about, we get stuff that most people didn't get. Brother Saladin was a true follower of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and so was his teacher, Brother Charles. And so we get a lot of stuff. We got a lot of stuff that most of you didn't get from these brothers and sisters around here because the people who taught them didn't know or didn't get or didn't believe it. So we know, as we go back on this and we see that they are determined to attack Iran, and we see that the first part of what I was telling you about the article, the U.S. will move to conquer Persia and this will expose the collapsing empire, the article on the Irons 1555 blog. Now, as Brother Rashid so humbly reminded me, when they attack Iran, that this would be one of the first part of the shooting wars of Armageddon. See, all that other stuff is a precursor. That is the ember that's smoldering. But when they attack Persia or they attack the surrounding outlying nations, right, it will cause the embers that are smoldering to burst forth into a full-blown regional conflagration or conflagration, right? This is what is going on. This is prophecy. And this will expose the empire. And when America gets bogged down in her butt handed to her in that region, China will look to her and say, she's not what she used to be. This is the time. And China will move in Asia and put the spank on America when she tries to intervene. China's going to put the spank on her. And the Asian nations are going to eventually join in on China's side. I don't care what it's looking like now. The Asiatic nations are the ones laying her low. They're about ready to strike, and America knows this to be true, right? And once they push America out of Asia, she will make her last stand internationally in Europe. And that's when Russia will move on the former territories in the Baltics and in the former Ukraine, Soviet territory. That's when the war of Europe will take place, when you see America and Russia going back and forth in Europe. And America will get her behind handed to her handedly by the Russian military forces. And America will escalate the war to a thermonuclear exchange. And the holy sciences of Islam will then intervene and prevent this from spreading globally. You understand me? They understand this. Trump is insane. Why do you think he's here? He's here because, you know how he said, God put me here. He's right. He put him in, but not for the reason that he thinks. It's to help free the ex-slaves. It's to help bring down the American establishment. It's to help implode the economy. It's to help remove the dollar. It's to help in the fall of America. It is to help liberate the world from this parasite that has been sucking the life's blood out of the black, the brown, the red, and the yellow, and even to their own white people globally. It's a crucial time. Let me go to the phone lines before we go to this last thought, okay? Here you go. I go to the phone lines with my good brother. I know that's my good brother, Brother Gerald. Brother Gerald, I'll send to you. As-salamu alaykum.
As-salam, sir. Outstanding teachers, brother, as always. You've hit on some very integral parts, brother, on the monetary system, geopolitically, brother, all of these that's weighing in to the fall of America. And what you touched on in relation to the Wesley Clark comment in relation to the seven countries that America's going to take out in 5 years and Iran finishing off with the last one, it's very interesting how things are transpiring in relation to the central banks and to the dollar. And we go to the messenger's teachings and where the messenger says in the fall of America, chapter 20, page 87, decline of the dollar. The stronghold of the American government is falling to pieces. She has lost her prestige among the nations of the earth. One of the greatest powers of America was her dollar. The loss of such power will bring any nation to weakness, for this is the media of exchange between nations. The English pound and the American dollar have been the power and beckoning light of these two great powers. But when the world went off the gold and silver standard, the financial doom of England and America was sealed. And we see exactly what's going on, where the devil was trying to keep his central banks afloat with these primary countries. And Iran finished it off, and how Iran is one of the strongest countries that America so ironically chose to attack what? Last, right? So there's an article in Strategic Culture. It's called Reading Sun Tzu in Tehran. We know the book of Sun Tzu, The Art of War. And it says, Iran is not done. General Hajizadeh, commander of the RGC Aerospace Force, said in a briefly yesterday that the strike was the starting point of a great operation. He also underlined that the strikes were not meant to cause fatalities. We intended rather to deliver a blow to the enemy's military machine. And the Pentagon is saying, too, that Iran intentionally missed U.S. troops at the bases. This is tantamount to the Pentagon admitting that Iran can land missiles with extreme accuracy over a distance of 700 miles and further. This occurred with not one missile being intercepted by the U.S. forces. To completely avoid targeting soldiers at a large military base is no mean feat. It suggests an accuracy with a meter or two, not 10 meters, for Iranian missiles. Isn't this the point? It suggests that the advances of Iran guidance systems land missiles with extreme precision haven't we seen something similar happen recently in Saudi Arabia, ABTEC? And was it not clear from ABTEC that highly expensive U.S. air defense systems do not work? The IRGC satisfactorily have demonstrated that they and their allies can penetrate U.S. manufactured